Welcome back to Black and Published, a podcast for writers, poets, playwrights, and storytellers of all kinds. I'm your host, Nikisha Elise Williams, an award-winning author, two-time Emmy Award-winning producer, publisher, all that good stuff. Today, we're talking with Tamika Newhouse, author of the romance collection, Sugar Hill. Tamika went from teen mom to CEO by the age of 20. She is the author of 17 novels and has landed on numerous bestsellers lists and is the winner of 7 African American Literary Awards. Only 9 months after debuting her first novel in 2009, she landed a major publishing contract without an agent and went on to become the CEO of Delphine Publications. To date, she has published nearly 300 books, launched the careers of hundreds of writers, and developed a powerful organization in the publishing industry that has honored literary legends such as Nikki Giovanni, Zane, Frances Ray, and Terry Woods. Adweek called her the Shonda Rhimes of Black publishing, and AdColor nominated her as Innovator of the Year in 2020 for her work with her festival, Black Writers Weekend. As a member of the African American Film Critics Association, Tamika contributes to amplifying Black writers in film and television through critical reviews and broadcasted conversations. She currently leads a team of writers developing original films, shows, and reality programming through her own media company, Delphine Legacy Media. Her original series, Traces of Mika, is a society and culture podcast that features unscripted conversations with friends, family, and celebrity writers. She currently tours the country speaking about her battle with mental illness and depression while fulfilling her dreams as well as mentoring aspiring writers. Today, she is creating new stories that dig into motherhood, sexuality, and self-love while raising her children in Atlanta. In this conversation, we discuss lessons she learned in launching her publishing company, how she disrupted the industry to change it from the inside, and how she hopes her stories of sexually liberated women help women own their sexual agency. Black and Published family, let's welcome Tamika to the show. Okay, so first, thank you for coming on Black and Published. I truly appreciate it. And so to get right into the interview, you are the author of 17 novels and with more on the way. So I want to know, when did you first know, first question, when did you first know that you were a writer?
Oh, you know what? I always tell people, when you are born with a talent, because writing is an art form. And I think that people forget that because English is such a common language and everybody thinks because they can put words together, they can write a book. But writing really is, you know, it's an art form, like it's an artistry. So you have to be able to learn how to connect with people, understand emotions, how people be able to connect with your characters and connect with your emotions. How do you tell somebody that your character is mad versus just saying my character is mad? And I have been able to create emotions and lines from a very early age, maybe 9, 10. And by the time I was 12, I told my mother I was going to move to Atlanta. I was going to become this full-time novelist. And that's all I ever saw myself doing. Terry McMillan was kind of like the goat in my eyes. She was doing something that back then Black women weren't doing. And when I discovered that, and I was 12 when I discovered that she wrote House Out, I Got a Groove Back, Will You Take Hell, which came out 2 years prior to that. So I was like, hold up. She did it? Cool. I'm going to do that too. And that's basically how I got started with, you know, just dreaming out loud and stuff, you know.
I feel like Black books are kind of like Black television shows where we come in waves. So it was like the 90s and early 90s when Terry came out with Waiting to Exhale in like 92. And then after that, it was like Black book bonanza and you see yourself everywhere. And then it was like, and the same thing like with the TV shows. So like, and now you're navigating both of those arenas. Why?
Because I can. I be telling people that the visions and things in your head that you want to possibly be true, do the steps to make them work. And I do it all simply because I can, simply because no one is telling me that I'm good enough, simply because someone is not opening the door for me. I told myself I was good enough. I opened my own door. I built my own table because these were things I wanted to do. So I discovered the steps to make them happen. And then I did the work after that. I built the relationships. I networked. I traveled. And I was, the key to this is just being consistent. You know, it's talented people everywhere. And we're all built and, you know, and birthed uniquely. We all exist for a reason. But are we tapping into our existence? Are we tapping into our purpose? And once you do tap into it, the key to, fulfilling the life that you want is consistency. You can't start then stop or get discouraged and slow down or somebody hurts your feelings or somebody did this and did that. It's just not all glory, you know, that you want to stop. It don't work like that. So it's always being consistent in spite of you know, the bad and the good. You just can't be excited about, you know, the things that you want when it just feels good to you.
So like, let's talk about those steps to becoming consistent. Your first book came out in 2009, correct?
Correct.
So what was the story of that book that made you want to write it? And then what were your steps after you wrote it to get it out?
Well, I freehand wrote, my first book was called The Ultimate No-No. It ended up being a 4-part series. And I freehand wrote it first because I wasn't typing at the computer just yet. And this was 08 or something like that, 07, one of them. And I wrote the book because I was naturally a loner. And I naturally did not have a big crowd of friends or anything like that. And I had just lost my mother 3 weeks prior. And my mother took her last breath in front of me and my sister. It was very life-changing, life-altering. It's one thing to be told that your family has passed, but it's another thing to witness it. And it kind of changed my whole dynamic. And I went to what my comfort zone, and that's writing, because I can control my characters. I can control their lives. And I couldn't forget about mine for a little bit. And so when I wrote that book as a therapeutic goal or just distract me from real life, I set that book up on my shelf for like a year. Until I started my very first business, which was AAMBC, which stands for African Americans on the Move Book Club. Now I'm 20 years old. I have a 9-month-old baby. This is my second child. And I'm bored. I'm living in a city where I don't know people, and I really want to be a part of something more. That's what really birthed that book club. And ultimately, through that book club, I began to meet hundreds and hundreds of other Black writers just like me. And I was like, well, wait a minute. I know about Eric Jerome Dickey, Mary Morrison, Mary Monroe, with Walter Mosley, Maya Angelou, you know, all the, you know, the popular ones. Mm-hmm. I know like the standard 50 good Black writers that we see all the time. But you mean to tell me y'all exist too? And I can do it too. So I went to Google, I purchased self-publishing books and all that. I went to library and I went to Barnes & Noble's Borders back then to search the halls of, or the shelves of the books to see what was out there. And I studied it. I did the steps. I found an editor. I found a cover designer. I studied what typesetting was, and I published a book on my own. And I was actually on a plane, my very first time on a plane touring with that book before my book even dropped. And I've been consistent ever since then. I think I spent my first year on a plane every month. I ended up landing a major book deal with Kensington, which is one of the top 5 publishers, without an agent, solely because I was getting on everybody's nerves. I was on every blog, every podcast, every book event. I was hitting up every book club, telling about my book. And I was getting on all the other artists' nerves. I don't care. But I ended up achieving all of my goals simply because I was obsessed, I was consistent, and I was excited. I enjoyed it. So for me, that's basic. Like, I discovered the steps, I did the steps, and I just took off running because it's me. Like, I'm going to treat myself the very, very, very best. And if I really want people to treat me the same, I got to set the tone. And I put that tone way up there. And so, yeah, so I think I answered the question.
You did, but there were so many steps. So now I'm trying to figure out, how do I go back? So like 2009, you self-published a book. What platform did you use?
I used back then, it was called Lightning Source. It was a self-publishing platform that allowed independent artists or writers to get their books distributed like a major.
And it's still out there.
Now print on, and that's the thing about it is when you put out a project that is the creative side. But then you have the business side to it as well. And I had to really learn business the hard way as I was going, because all I saw was, oh, I want to put out a book, and I could, and that's great. But then no one ever taught me about financial literacy, about business and infrastructure and registering your company. I learned all those things as I went along, building an empire. By the time I was 23, I'm making six figures with a company that's not fully properly registered. Some Black folks stuff. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm sorry. Like, I had to learn the hard way. I'm just saying, but I learned.
Child, no, Lightning Source is still a company that's out there. It's
yes,
Ingram Spark Lightning Source. That's one of my distribution partners that I use as well for my projects and my authors. So pro tip right there on Lightning Source. So yeah, let's talk about the business, because you have your own publishing company and media company. I have my own publishing company. And I always say I started my company out of vanity because I didn't want nobody else's name on my stuff. So I was like, okay, mm-hmm. who I got to pay to do whatever and make this little LLC and get everything together. Now we in the copyright and the trademarking phases and doing payroll and all of this other stuff and 1099s for your freelancers or whatnot. So let's talk about your business. It started with Delphine Legacy Media, correct? Or is it Delphine?
Well, it started with Delphine Legacy Media is what exists now. Delphine Publications is what started back then.
Yeah, so let's start with Delphine Publications.
That's my mother's name, Delphine. And I named my company after her because I wanted her name to be spoken on a daily basis. For me, she identified everything that I wanted to create and ultimately publish, whether in any type of genre, because my mother was all of those things. She was the good, the bad, the indifferent, she was a counselor. She also wasn't able to fully live the lifestyle that she wanted, because back then we weren't able to really kind of be open and free like we are now. So I really wanted her name to kind of identify with that power of freedom, just to be anything that you want to be and walk in that. So Delphine Publications, I started that in 08. At the peak, I had over 30 writers. I enjoyed being a publisher under Delphine Publications, because with every writer, they were coached, they were mentored. I took them on the road with me. I would print their own books out and had their books to be there when they ready, and then cash them out right then and there. I would coach them on site. I would bring their readers to them. It was so great to see readers recognize their books and then be able to connect with the authors. Printing out their postcards and promotions, like really equipping them to be a full-time career writer. And a lot of them have gone on to be full-time writers. But what I did not like about publishing is the lack of accountability and integrity when it comes to our people, not just in publishing, but just with our people, because publishing is a partnership. It's not a, let me find a source to make the way easy for me. And because I was an independent publisher, and I'm young, I think I'm about 22, and I'm publishing people that's double my age. And I really had to, you know, to fight for that respect in this industry. And when it got to the point where people began to see what I did for myself, they'd be like, oh, Tamika Newhouse, you did that for yourself. Well, why you ain't do this for my book? But Tamika Newhouse and Delphine Publications is two different entities. So when I'm on the road promoting myself, why do you think that I should be taking all your books and shit with? Can I cuss? I'm sorry. All
you said it. Say what you're going to say, sis.
Like, what is we doing? And then when I don't, or when I reach a level in my personal journey, I had writers over here upset. Or writers thinking that they were going to get the same thing. I really began to attract users, pretenders, and then people that just weren't genuinely good for the company. And that's solely because I'm a writer. I'm still this Texas girl with this free heart and, you know, wanting everybody to dream out loud, this extra stuff. Some things I had to really learn the hard way. But I'm like, you know, it began to be unfair. Because if I'm supplying all these things for you, and as a publisher, the only thing you have to do is make sure that the book is available for purchase. That part. So let me school some people who don't know what a publisher is supposed to be doing for you.
Oh, hold on. I was going to say, because like, as for my company, I don't offer marketing. Like, I do my
but I did.
Like, I tell them, I don't offer marketing. I don't know how to market you. I'm still trying to figure out how to market myself. You see me on these TV shows, that's because I used to work in television, and I can call a friend who is a producer and say, hey, sis, can I come on your show right fast? Here's a pitch. Yep. Like, so I know I don't offer marketing.
It's interesting that you said that, because they don't understand the levels it takes to build relationships. They also don't understand that the work that you do today sometimes doesn't benefit you for maybe days to come. But the key is, like, you're supposed to be consistently working. By that year two, three, whatever, it gets easier and easier because you've done work here that's now benefiting, you know, your future. That takes time. I had writers coming in from the gate wanting their royalty checks to be paying a rent, to be getting in luxury cars. And all this extra stuff. And I'm like, I'm not Jesus and I'm not paving away. And I had to really begin, I'm just saying, I had to really create separation. Now, when I began to say no, and I began to not give as much, because I think my writers were spoiled as well too. Again, marketing materials, press sheets, bookstore distribution, we're going to expos, I'm doing all these different things to kind of push them forward. You can see them probably getting spoiled after a while, or having these expectations. And I wasn't even supposed to be doing it.
They're looking at you like you Penguin Random House.
Exactly. Penguin Random House may do that. And that's and honestly, that's an investment. Let's say this again. An investment. Your publisher's not your friend. And they also aren't spending money just to lace your pockets. They're going to spend money to earn their money back. And then you can receive what you are afforded to. It's the same way with a record company. You don't see these artists get this record deal and these companies spend monies on videos, styling and interviews and marketing, thousands of dollars, and then release the album and they start getting a check immediately. Oh, here you go. No, they want to recoup their investment back.
And so, like,
why
I always
is it so
tell,
hard to understand.
Yeah, I always tell the authors that I work with and the ones that I have signed that, like, look, you don't have to go through me, because you can do everything that I'm getting ready to do for you on your own. One.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I am a publishing company, but the model is different because I don't have an advance to pay you. Yep. So you get your royalties when I get my royalties, which means every service that I provide for you that you can go ahead and do on your own.
Yep.
You are paying for in advance. You are going to have professional editing and cover design and all these different things. But
yep.
that comes at a cost. And then I do not offer marketing. So what you put into your book to get it out is what you're going to receive. And when the checks come in, you will get your portion of those royalties.
You get your portion.
But people don't always understand that. And I always feel like, especially now, because anybody can put a book out. Like, you can put a book out tomorrow if you really want to, just because of all the platforms that have made it easier. Like, you started self-publishing in 2009. I talked to someone else who started self-publishing in 1994. So the industry, yeah, child, okay. The industry has completely changed. And I think what we're seeing is that we're trying to look at major publishers and what they're doing and the reckoning that's happening in that industry and replicate it here, where Black authors have always been thriving. And there's a difference
right there. It's not only is it a difference, but we have to work on the mentality of us. We have to get to the place of where we have a full understanding and an accountability for our part in our journey. Specifically when it comes to publishing a book or pursuing your dreams, connect and build relationships with people, but definitely be genuine with that. My thing is, make relationships and be genuine with that, because if it does start to go left, you're accountable for that. Just like if it was going right. And that's the part that get on my nerves too. You want credit only when it go good? What is we doing, folks? You don't want the credit when it go bad? So it's everybody else's fault? But if it go good, it's all you? Come on. No, that's not right. I think we have to be better when it comes to working together. Bridging those gaps in those relationships, we got to work on our mentality. We have to continue to teach financial literacy, continue to teach building legacies and leaving financial or some type of wealth for your children. generational wealth. Like, I'm all about that. But it really does start with the mentality first and people really being genuine within their journey. You have to be willing to sacrifice, and that sacrifice money, time, emotions. You got to be willing to deal with the changes that comes with being in an uncomfortable space. You got to be willing to kind of pray that thing through or push through in spite of when things are not quite going your way. It's not going to... Who in the hell did y'all see make it to the very top? And their journey was perfect. Nobody robbed from them. Nobody stole from them. Nobody hurt their feelings. Nobody, like, they didn't have a door closed in their face or whatever the case. Who sitting at the top do you know did not experience these things?
I still got an unpaid invoice as a reminder of never to make that mistake again.
Exactly. But yet we have all these people now talking about, you know, this generational wealth, and I'm going to build, you know, this financial literacy, and I'm going to put out this book, and I'm going to start this company. I'm a Black business owner, and I'm this and I'm that. And nobody's really connecting the dots on how to maintain that. Nobody's really digging into their own character, because that also is a huge key to success. What is your character like? Who are you? Lauren said it best. How are you going to win when you ain't right within?
Well, so then let's talk about that with you. You have at this point two businesses, Delphine Publications and then AAMBC, the book club. How are you continuing to build your business and do all of those things and get it legitimized for real on paper, as well as keep your creative spark?
Oh, well, I have strategically been working on my team for the past 4 years now. Because I built my empire before having a team, I was like an octopus doing all these things on my own. So I had the book club, I had the publishing company, I had my own brand, then I had the award show, then I had my book festival. All these things are under the same umbrella. And then my brand itself has multiple layers to it too, because then I have my podcast, Trace D'Amica, I have my books that come out. Then I do my speaking and my coaching. So it's, girl, I do multiple different things. How, I guess, the best way to really, I guess, identify or I guess explain what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, is understanding how to let some things go. Delegating some things, and then identifying really good people that's going to help you grow. Because honestly, you have to have a really good, strong team that understands their role. You got to have a number two, you got to have a number three, and you got to have your worker bees that all believe in your vision. That is the hardest thing to actually build, because you have a lot of people with this I that want to be at the top. They want to be in the front. But you don't even have the capabilities, the leadership, the ingenuity or the endurance to keep it going. You don't have the know-how. And again, back down to the character. When you look at a triangle, it's usually one person sitting at the top. It's not room for dozens of people up here. Like, now one person is at the top because you got multiple people that help that machine work.
The undergirding.
I wish that people will understand their power in being number two, or their power in being number three or number four, because we can do so much more together than trying to do it apart so that we all can be number one or get all the notoriety. It doesn't work like that. So for me, I had to really understand that dynamic of letting some things go. Then I had to train those people and have patience with those people so they can understand how to do it. And ultimately, it boils down to my leadership. How do I effectively communicate? How am I making my team feel? What also am I offering besides money? Because people want to feel important. They want to feel good about what they're doing. But obviously, we all need money and resources to survive. But what else can I get here? And I think that also, too, that has helped me be able to build my team. Now I have nearly 20 people on my team spread across 5 different brands. So it's a lot. But where I use a project management tool, I have my daily to-do sheets. I have my calendar that I go by every day, and I just stay organized as much as possible. And I focus on my day so that I don't feel overwhelmed and I can kind of keep some things going.
Okay. So that's part one of the question. But in doing all of that and building that infrastructure and that team and staying organized and teaching and having patience, where are your creative pursuits? Because you still got books coming out. You had a book come out 2 years ago. You got more books coming out, I'm assuming.
Girl, I wish I was coming out with a book every year. But see, the thing about it is I'm a storyteller and I'm a creative all across the board. So not just of the written word, but also of experiences. And I have been creating events since 2011 and creating experiences around books, just unique approaches to create conversations around our stories. And so I've created, and I've ended up starting doing this for different networks, different studios. And now I have my festival that I do here in Atlanta. So I'm able to still create and create, you know, create stories and opportunities in that way. So I don't really feel neglected in my, I guess, my creative writing journey, because now I'm also doing scripts and short films and films. I'm actually producing visuals to my novels versus just writing novels. I think when I'm now that I'm like 17 books in, I'm a little bored with it. I want to be challenged a little bit more in my creative space. So I'm more so leaning towards visual, you know, motion pictures versus books. I've got Sugar Hill Part 2 that's coming out hopefully by Valentine's Day, sometime this spring, y'all. It's coming because I'm writing on it now. And then after that, I have no idea, but I'm going to be reselling a lot of my projects because I have 17 romance novels. And then it's all from books and films for the most, I mean, films and shows for the most part here on out.
All right. You set that up so that we can talk about, I know you had like a little visual trailer drop for A Piece of Sugar Hill like last year.
Yes, right? I did. Right.
So I'm going to let you find your document. I'm going to read what the book is about, and then you're going to take it away and set it up and read a little bit for us. All right. So that we can hear the genius that is Miss Tamika Newhouse.
Perfect.
So this is the premise of Sugar Hill. Imagine meeting Mr. Wright at the wrong time. Throwing herself into her career, Danny settles for a passionless relationship with Jacob. Hardcore and shielded on the surface, passion and love are the last things on Danny's mind. Until one day, a conversation with a friendly stranger gives her that good old feeling back and ready to risk it all. A night of passion triggers something Danny hasn't felt in a long time. But do you trust the feeling with the one you just met? Or do you trust your history with the one that you're with? In this romantic but sexy comedy, discover a story so hilariously relatable that you have to ask yourself, what if the person that you're supposed to be with is already here? All right, Miss Newhouse, it's on you.
I like that synopsis. That sounds good.
Girl, I wonder who wrote that.
Have you ever had deja vu? Deja vu. Yeah, as in you've lived a moment before. I guess you can say I've had those moments, but my voice trails off as my mouth grows dry. This man is tempting, to say the least. Sexy, dark, handsome, and my kind of eye candy. Shit. I want to fuck him. I can say this stuff, right?
Read your book, baby.
I want to fuck him in the aircraft bathroom directly behind us if I were that bold. Sitting in the last row may have come in handy after all. Yes. Is it that serious, though? Negro has my panties wet, and he doesn't even know it. But he quizzes me, probably wondering why I stopped mid-sentence. Hell, I'm trying not to say what I really want to say. Can you fuck me? My trip to the airport was a frustrating one, to say the least. From heavy traffic that delayed me getting to the airport to not checking my bag in on time, and now sitting in the very last row of the plane, I'm agitated and about ready to put my headphones on and zone out. But the musky heat that is swirling around the aircraft isn't helping my mood. Are you saying you're having one? I asked. Looking at me, he's confused. He says, nah, I just had a crazy moment this morning on the way to the airport. Don't tell me you're on some Final Destination shit. We got to climb out this aircraft, I chuckle. Giving him a mock stare down, I await his reply. Seconds later, he raises his hands up in surrender and grins. Nah, baby girl, I just felt like my way to the airport was familiar. The song that came on the radio reminded me of something. We both laughed as I wiggle further into my seat to begin buckling my seatbelt. Oh, okay, cool. I was sure about to get my ass up. My country slang is evident as I aggressively buckle up and plop back into my seat. Mr. Sexy Chocolate snickers a little before buckling himself up as well, while focusing his attention on the flight attendant. I don't bother to pay attention to her. I mean, at this point, I know the entire routine. I already know what's going to be before she said it. I've been on these damn planes 100 times over. But never have I said to a fine-ass piece of meat that's sitting next to me right now. Typically, most men just found me funny and cute, but never really wanted to challenge the challenge of dating a woman like me. Maybe because when I was living in Atlanta, there were two types of women that men ran after. The fake big booty chick and the desperate, also known as I will take care of a man type chick. I'm neither one of those, to say the least. Glancing down at my phone, my fingers automatically tap on the Twitter app. I changed my mind, deciding that I had just enough time to post a picture to Instagram. Up, up, and away, my caption reads, making my life seem more significant than it really is. First time in Miami, I heard him ask. I look over to him. No, I've been here a dozen times. He laughs a little. Oh, okay. Then he laughs. No, he smiles a little. Oh, okay. Then he laughs. Normally, people post pictures like that on the gram for attention, no? This nigga think he's Idris and shit and want to judge me on what I'm doing on my damn social media? I don't get out often and decided to make it seem like I was living a life outside of my laptop for once. I snap. Throwing his hands in the air, he chuckles, and I roll my eyes while turning my head away from him. If there is one thing I hate, it's pretty dudes that act like they can do and say whatever they want. Why am I sitting next to him again? Officially turned off, my clit deflates like a sad balloon, and I'm so ready for a seat for a new seat. Hey, beautiful. I didn't mean any harm. I was just making an observation. I gave him a dry smile and turned my attention back to my phone. Satisfied with the number of filters used in my photo, I pressed submit and I smiled at the results. Beautiful. I look over and notice my Instagram picture on his screen as he double taps on the picture. The heart notification pops up on his screen as his thumb hovers over my picture. What the hell? I know your username when you held your phone down. That's kind of creepy, isn't it? I say, pulling my phone closer to my chest. He pauses before chuckling. I guess so. I'm thinking too deep, I guess, huh? The loud outburst from the overhead speaker interrupts him as they instruct us that the plane is moving back from the cabin. I take a deep breath and look out the window, getting lost in the rain, and deciding to ignore the invasion of my privacy sounds like a better option, for now at least. I'm not a fan at all of flying in the rain, and my attention needs to be on not falling out of the sky once the lightning strikes us. My extreme thoughts cause me to giggle a little. Saying a quick prayer, I shoot off a quick text to my close friends and my boyfriend, Jacob, letting him know that I'm getting ready to take off. Of course, I can't resist one last scan of my social media notifications before shutting my phone off. No longer distracted by the phone, I eye my sexy stranger as he fumbles through some of his things to prepare for our ride. Everything about him screams, I'm sexy and I know it. I can't lie. I'm curious about him. And it isn't because I immediately want to slide down on his lap. It's because he seems different, nice, approachable, secure, and he can hold a conversation from what I can see. You can follow me back, by the way. I'm not that creepy random guy. He jokes. Hardy har har. How do you know I care enough to even follow you back, Mr. Christian? And I have a feeling you might want to. I mean, I'm a nice guy. His boyish grin tugs on my heartstrings. I blush. Nice. Sure. Yep. He playfully pops his collar and rubs his chin. You all right? Simmer down. I joke back. He looks crushed as he replies, a woman after my own heart. I hope that this relationship gets better before we land. The rattling of the plane alerts me that we are about to take off. Grip my seat, I brace for the inevitable jerk. Lucky for you, this plane has my focus right now. For now, I study him. Noticing his arrogant grin while shaking my head, he is a bit much if you ask me. Overly confident and extremely talkative. He intrigues me, but confuses me at the same time. I'm confident I'm looking extra regular right now. Still, homeboy is smiling at me as if I'm Beyonce. I hadn't had a chance to put on any makeup before loading up the car to head to the airport, and I was so busy texting and checking messages while driving, I didn't even put any on before I hopped out the car. So here I sit, plain and simple, and this sexy stranger is flirting with me and won't shut the fuck up for the life of me. Then the Negro starts to follow me on social media after lurking on my phone. Okay, wait, am I being targeted? Is he trying to kidnap me? Surely this man isn't up to anything but just a good conversation because he doesn't want these hands of mine. I am the wrong girl to try to kidnap or steal from, and I will kick somebody's ass. Oh, wait, maybe he's just feeling me. Hell, I am sexy. I mean, not right now, but soon, in a minute. Well, tonight, when I head out for my event, I will be sexy. Either way, he seems too pressed to talk, so something must be up. Are you okay? His voice pulls me out of my thoughts. just watching the clouds. That's all. I'm lying, but I'm pretty sure I sound convincing. Yeah, that's my favorite part too. I'm a little mad though that you got the window seat. Why is that? Because if I sat there, then I would not be blocked by all of that. I cringe as my eyes grow big, watching him make a big circle imitating my head. Really? We chuckle as I bring my hands to my head and try to shield it from his eyesight. My head is not that big. Christian grins, revealing his pearly whites, and the vision makes me sink in my seat. Can his man get any sexier? He reaches for my hand and takes it away from his head. His hand touching mine, I feel my clit jerk in attention. My reflexes causing me to instantly shift in my seat to soothe the pulsating in between my legs. My eyes intensely move to his hands as if I'm monitoring his motions. Are you this open and friendly with everyone? I mean, you have been sitting next to me for 5 whole minutes and have managed to insult me and talk to me to death. He lets loose of my hand and once again places his own up in surrender. I'm sorry, miss. He pauses. Yes, I prompted. He waves me off with a smile. Can I have your name? I give it a little oh. So is that why you pause? I was just supposed to offer up my name. I mean, I did offer up mine. Yeah, you did. He snickers once more. You a tough one. I shrug and nod. I had heard this before. I'm tired of the same old song being said that I'm too strong, too hard, too outspoken. This isn't the 1940s, and men that did receive wifely treatment from a woman back then received it because they took care of their woman. Most men I casually date want the husband treatment without receiving any benefits at all. Tough as in, you have to put in the effort, I challenge him. Touche. Light bulb, I point to my head. Nodding his head slightly from side to side, he focuses on his thoughts before speaking again. May I have your name, beautiful? I have a mental battle in my head before about 3 seconds. I can't continue to be mean in front like this man isn't turning my pussy on, or I can just say, I can shake the man's hand and end up liking him. Well, here goes nothing. Danny. Danny, short for Danielle. Bingo. Love it. Danielle fits you. Fits me. He laughs again, challenges everything I say, huh? Maybe. You're beautiful, but then again, you know that. I do. I can't help but blush. I'm certain I look like a shy girl, confused about what he's asking. I saw you from the moment you stepped up into our terminal, and when the energies in the air agree with me and allow you to sit next to me, I took up the chance of not wasting any more time. Is that so? Call in line. You know it is. I paused, and I pondered on his words. Yeah, you're right. I fly. I chuckle. There you are, Daniel. My neck intensively rolls with a little sass. You're pretty forward, Christian. You're pretty rare, Danielle. Okay, he's laying on pretty thick. Okay. For once, you're coming out pretty perfect. And perfection means that there is some shit at the end of the tunnel. Say something real. So am I telling you that you're beautiful isn't real enough? No, I guess what I'm trying to say is, why are you telling me this? I guess the old-fashioned way of complimenting someone is out the window, huh? He extends his hand in effort for my hand. My name is Christian. Slowly taking his hand, he causes me to finally give in. Danielle, a meek smile swiftly appears on my face. See? Deja vu again. How so? My eyes glaze with curiosity. I just met you twice in the past 5 minutes. That's a memory I can say is worth living over and over again. He never takes his eyes away from me. He's staring me down as if we're challenging who's going to speak next. Caught up in his eyes and his words, I swallow hard and grin. My hand starts to feel warmer in his. I just felt it. You did? Our hands slip out of our grip as our eyes stay focused on each other. I know that I'm tripping, but something about this man has me consumed, horny and excited all the same damn time. I extend my hand again, squealing girlishly. Can I meet you for a third time? He laughs and takes my hand in his. Christian. Danielle. And we meet again. And that's it.
Ooh, child.
So that's her meeting the main guy. And from there, their whole romance kind of flourishes.
Yeah, I'm like, well, then who is Jacob?
Well, she mentions her boyfriend, Jacob. So people always ask me, and I had some better readers ask me, like, can you tell me why she was willing to cheat? And I'm like, why does it have to technically be a reason to why a woman is willing to be open to another man? Mm-hmm. Men do this all the time. And I have, and this is not my first book where I have written where my female leads have male tendencies. a lot of them are inspired by me in real life. Because I, for one, I don't technically believe in titles. I believe in action. And then two, I don't believe in monogamy. I believe in loyalty or discipline. Those things have to be taught and it has to be practiced, but they're not natural. Being with one person isn't natural. But those feelings can go away when you're totally and fully, completely fulfilled by one person. And then often when it comes to the whole sexual part, for me, love and sex are two different things. And so when I create my characters, I show that they're more open to, and I've been like that since the Ultimate No-No, since 2009, way before women was popping it and singing about WAP and all this extra stuff.
Before the busted challenges.
I've always written my female characters like that because I've never been the one to sit around and be sad behind a dude. I've never been the one to wait to be chosen by a dude. I've actually never been in a relationship because I said, ooh, I want to be with you. Never happened. It's always on the other, like they would see something in me and they want to choose me. But I want women to understand just because a man chooses you, don't mean you gotta be like, okay, I'll let you have me. Okay, I'll accept what you give me because you chose me and I don't want to be by myself. No, ma'am. I need you guys to take a little bit more control in your love language and in your love story and choose the type of romance that you want and tell that man exactly how you want to be treated or woman, whoever you're in love with, tell them exactly what you need to be loved and for you to be happy with them. And call it that. I'm coming out with a dating book to y'all eventually.
Oh, snap. Mika's rules for dating. I'm not ready. I think that's dope that you give your characters the agency that you wish women would take in their own lives. Because I feel like all too often women, especially Black women to some extent, can fall in love with the characters of a book or a story or a movie or whatever the case may be and admire those characteristics that are created for you to enjoy, but not realize how to embody them in their own life, whatever it was that made you drift toward or away from a particular character or scene or made you mm-hmm. feel like you something resonated with you from something that you saw or that you read.
Mm-hmm. And I tell people to choose, and this comes harder when you are with someone or when you have children, because sometimes we do have to sacrifice, but find a really good fine line where you can have both, where you can have the things that's going to make you happy and where the people that you love and care for, they're also happy as well. But I'm so exhausted and overly exhausted and frustrated with too many women like me, Black women in particular, choosing what everybody else would want for them. Choosing to do everything, making sure that everybody else is good and taken care of. You know that strong Black woman thing? We so strong because we can take this and we can take that and we can carry the family and we can take care of our kids and we can take care of our men and we can take it and we can take it. I don't want to keep doing that. I don't want to have to keep taking it. I don't want those things. Can somebody take some of it off of me? Can someone help me? Can I have a good, strong partner in that? Even when it comes down to your friendship dynamic. Like, have people that's going to add value to you. You don't have to always just overly give, and it's so draining. So, yeah, it's good. I can keep going on and on and on, but I always try to make sure my characters kind of exude, you know, the core values I believe in. And I just really want people to be happy. Sometimes your happiness may not align with the person that you're with, but what are you going to do? Not say anything? Let's talk about it. Let's see if it could be something that could be understood with the other person. Then give that other person that you're saying these things to time to evaluate and understand it. And, you know, understand who you're talking to. How do you think they're going to receive this? Because 9 times out of 10, when you tell people things, they apply it to them. How does this make me feel? How is this going to change my life? Like, I'm trying to tell you about something about me. You're trying to make it about you. So who are you actually telling these things to, and give them a chance to, you know, to process what you're saying and then continue those conversations so that y'all can find your happiness together. But no more sacrificing what you want truly for yourself so that everybody else can be happy. And no more just accepting the man that chose you because you think that's what's supposed to happen. You're supposed to sit around and wait for somebody to choose you. No, don't do that either. Require them to love you in the way that you need to be loved.
And so, like, in telling those stories through your characters, you're obviously pulling from, as you said, some of your own life experiences and how you kind of operate and move in the world and in relationships. And you talk about sacrifice. What sacrifices have you had to make for being who you are, your business, and your creativity?
I took sacrifices in family, especially with my children. I raised my children by myself a majority of their life. And that was really, really, I talk about this in depth on my podcast, Traces of Mika. I dealt with a lot of family secrets and trauma that I did not even talk about or reveal even at the peak of my author career. I'm on tour and I'm doing these speaking engagements and I'm having like the worst of the worst happen in my real life. And I talk about this for the first time on my podcast because I wanted to utilize, now that I'm out of it, and this season two of Traces of Mika is called The Other Side of Healing. Because when I was going through the moments of healing, and I've been doing this all of my 30s, trying to understand me, undoing past traumas, understanding my childhood, understanding my love languages and how I need to be loved, all of my 30s. And once I realized that there had to be different levels or different processes or approaches to healing, I really wanted to use myself as an example for that. And a lot of the sacrifices I made was within motherhood. My children have great book skills. They're knowledgeable. They're well-mannered. They're culturally diverse. But as far as the emotional part, I discovered that when women aren't taken care of emotionally, it trickles down. And we can try to be strong or we won't every day. But I also was matched with a partner, which was my ex, that wasn't a great partner for me. So I had a lot of struggle in raising my children where they're going to be, where they don't have a lot of emotional damage. And that was a huge sacrifice for me in dreaming and pursuing my dreams and doing the things that made me happy in my motherhood. And I talk about it a lot. And me and my children had to go through a healing process of where we understood each other. And then there were family secrets that my children didn't understand because I come from a different era. Grown folk business is a grown folk business. I'm not about to sit here and tell you everything that's going on. And because I refused to do that, my children had to develop a reason as to why certain things happen. And I became public enemy number one, even though I was protecting them from the truth. And it created a domino effect of a lot of chaos, just a lot. So I really suffered a lot in my dynamic with motherhood and parenting. And then another sacrifice I took was in romance. Because I married so young and then I began to really date, I was a hoe in my 20s. When I was done married with my marriage, I was a hoe. And I was dating whoever I wanted, doing whatever I wanted, just having fun, very honest with every single person I was dating. Always honest. Even now, I am my first time at 34 attempting to date someone seriously for the first time. He knows all about, you know, my needs, my wants, my desire, all that. Some of my traumas, because I'm not going to step into something with someone and they don't know me. So I had to have a time period where I was alone on purpose. So purposely single. Now, I've had a lot of people ask me to go out, move in, let's do this, do that. They want forever. Oh, no, I'm good. I had a lot of things going on that I needed to heal from. I needed to learn a lot more about myself. And then my children took Prairie. That was first. And then Tamika was second. Like, whatever I need to do to get this together needs to be done before I can even join, you know, a partnership with anybody else. I wasn't happy. It was a lot of chaos. And what does unhappy people do? They make other people unhappy. So I wasn't about to jump into. And so I had a lot of sacrifices in my own personal space when it comes to my things I wanted to do. And then just having to heal from past traumas and things like that. So I speak about this a lot on my podcast because there are people that are still in it. And there are people that are dealing with real betrayals, really, really horrible traumas. And they can't tend to kind of get out of it. I've even gone through public, like a public lynching where people wanted to destroy my name and people wanted to destroy my company. I've had a lot of hate from that. And I'm like, okay, I've really been through almost any and everything that you can kind of think of other than dying. And I almost did that too. So as I speak from these things from experience, and I just want people to listen to these stories, apply it to themselves, identify the areas that they feel that they need to heal from. Because without that, you don't really have this full happiness. You have things in you that's still going to cause, you know, friction with people that you love. It's going to start delays with things that you want to do because you're not completely healed. You're not completely past that trauma. Things are going to trigger you. So yeah, motherhood and romance.
So, and I know you talk a great deal about that on Traces of Mika season one. And I think you, didn't you do an interview with your daughter on?
I did.
In season one. And so now you say season two is the other side of healing. So far, what does that other side of healing look like for you now?
Accountability. Honestly, transparency, just being transparent first. And it's very light. It's once you begin to kind of talk about the things that have happened to you, talk about the things that you have done that wasn't, you know, so great, because we are all human. You kind of start unpacking. I don't know how to put it into words, but I know how I felt when I was carrying it all. Very heavy. Very like, you have moments, and I deal with bipolarism and depression on a daily basis. I have been clinically diagnosed with these things. I've also been committed once in my life for not being, obviously being able to function, attempt on my life, except I've done all these things. Because I didn't grow up giving these things of different ways to heal. I grew up in a church and they, you know, they just pray about it, you know, stuff like that. Pray about it. Like, come on, like that. It doesn't, sometimes we need a little bit more. And I had to discover physical or spiritual ways to help my inner peace to heal. And just going through and dealing with my own brain. I know that my brain needs extra attention. I know that I have to train myself and I have to be really disciplined in what I'm doing because anything can throw me off balance. Any little thing, and if I'm not continuously, it's kind of like bathing and eating. If I'm not continuously feeding my brain positivity, if I'm not continuously taking care of myself and meditating and praying or shutting down and just having a peaceful moment, I'm going to repeat that toxicity that I had before. The anger, the darkness, the heaviness, it was just so heavy. I don't want to feel that no more. It's just, I don't. So one, I think the best part of that is talking it out outwardly and not caring about what people think. I don't care. You can like it, not like it, judge me, not judge me. I don't care.
That's a great place to get to. I want to do a little speed round and then we're going to wrap this up. Okay. All right. So, what's your favorite book?
Friends and Lovers, Air Jerome Dickey.
Who's your favorite author?
Cherry McMillan.
What is your favorite song?
Oh, man, that's a good one. I'll say I Love the Lord by Whitney Houston.
Yes. What's your favorite movie?
Ooh, Love and Basketball.
The biggest obstacle that you've overcome?
Ooh, shit. oh my God, because there were so many. But the biggest one would have to be motherhood. It was an obstacle for me. I was so young, I didn't know what I was doing. So
even when you get older, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like, but the thing about it, when you don't know what you're doing, and then you have on the other end, you have people kind of helping that narrative and they're not there against you, it's really, really, really tough. And then when you give birth to children, you have children, so you get it. Those are babies. But they come of me. So I had to earn my children's love.
Mm.
That was hard.
Mm.
That was extremely hard. So to deal with that disappointment, pain, and hurt, and then not let my children feel that anger as much as possible, because sometimes they did feel it. I was so frustrated. But just to then put on a smile, and then your first love that you really want, they don't naturally give it to you for whatever reason. Yeah, that was something I had to really live through. Yeah.
What is the biggest stigma that you are still fighting?
The biggest stigma, I guess the biggest stigma that I'm fighting is trying to have everything right now. Like, it's feeling like right now isn't enough. Like enough is never enough. Whatever, it's just never enough. And I don't know if that's a stigma, but that's my current biggest struggle, is just getting out of my head and being okay with the process and where I'm at right now, and just growing with where I'm at right now. So that's what I'm still working on.
What is the first book where you saw yourself?
The Words I Didn't Say. I want to say that's like my seventh or eighth book I've ever written. But The Words I Didn't Say is a book that's mostly identical to who I was then. I began to really see myself in that character.
What book do you want to see get the movie treatment, since this is your new arena?
So we're going to be working on developing a film for my book, Cookie, A Footwear Story. And it's my YA novel. And it's like a Crooklyn meets Fresh. Those are 90 films. I don't know if y'all ever seen those films, but if y'all seen Fresh back in the day, that's an old hood film. And then Crooklyn, that's a Spike Lee joint. So those two films, yeah.
And then a final question for the speed round. What's one Black author who doesn't get enough credit for their contribution to the culture?
Me.
You better. You better name yourself to the new house.
There really are a lot. There really are a lot. But honestly, me. I want to say myself. Because I spent a lot of my life work pushing everybody else to the forefront. I was the one creating the platform or the opportunities for those writers. And I've seen a lot of them. I've been successful in spite of, because internally, behind the scenes, I get those partnerships. I have those relationships for the platforms that I help them gain. But honestly, I'm one of those people that's behind. There's a lot of us that be behind the scenes. Like Gayle King to Oprah. So I'm like the Gayle King to a lot of writers that have been able to now go on and do these extraordinary things, whether they're in film or in publishing. So I'll put myself up there to Tamika Newhouse.
So what's next for you, ma'am? I know you got Black Writers Weekend, you got Creative Con, you got everything going on at Delphine Legacy Media. What's next for Tamika Newhouse?
Well, my writer's room is in full speed. So we're developing and writing our own original films and TV pilots. That's my main baby for this year. And then Black Writers Weekend will return as a hybrid event. So it'll be social distancing events as well as online. And that'll be in June. And then the award show, which is it's a Black writer award show, which is called AAMBC Literary Awards. If you go to the AAMBCAwards.com, this is our 13th year. You can nominate any writer in film or in books. And we are actually going to be bringing that award show again back this year. We didn't get to do anything last year, but we'll be bringing it back into a small stage and live streaming that in April. And so what else? And then Sugar Hill Part 2. And then my podcast, which is Trace Tamika, which is streaming on everything, you guys. Season 2 is now a video cast as well. So the TV show will be streaming on YouTube and also in my own community. So I have my own community platform that you can join. You can receive behind the scenes of all the episodes beforehand. I have my own masterclasses that I give out that you can't receive anywhere else, only on this community platform. So if you go to my website, which is TamikaNewhouse.com, click on Join My Community or Dream With Me. I think this is what's called Dream With Me. And then subscribe, and then you'll be a part of my network. And you can receive all sorts of ways for you to ignite your own dreams. I talk about love and relationships, obviously publishing, And then you get to talk to me one-on-one because I do these live streams and conversations. So anyone who is dreaming and you there are things you want to accomplish, but that part that most coaches lack is that health, the mental health part, or giving you ways to take care of yourself mentally as you dream. That's really where I really kind of come into play. I love helping people connect with or identify, you know, their shortcomings mentally and help them get more mentally healthy so that they can dream and pursue these dreams. Because you got to have a healthy brain and just be a good, healthy person to maintain dreaming out loud.
Amen. And final question for the podcast. So you've put a lot into writing and publishing and telling your story and helping other people tell their stories. When you're dead and gone, what would you like someone to write about you and your legacy that you left behind?
She never sat her ass down. She was always doing something. And I really want people to talk just like that, man, because I cuss a lot. If y'all go and listen to Trace Amika, I tell y'all exactly how it is. I'm country. I cuss a lot. But I need y'all to, I don't want to sugarcoat. Just say she was always, I want my obituary to say she was always doing something. She never set her ass down. She was always dreaming and coming up with the next thing. But everything that I do, it is a lead way for other people. My journey is probably the most selfless journey I've ever seen when it comes to, I don't know, creatives. Almost all my life work has been for the betterment of another Black person. Whether I'm helping them publish a book, whether I'm putting them in a room with an agent, whether I'm selling their book to a publisher, all of my work has been to help people pursue and connect with those dreams and those opportunities. So, yeah, they're going to probably say she was always doing stuff for people and she wouldn't sit her ass down. That was my legacy.
If that's not in your obituary, that's definitely going to be the title of this episode. She never set her ass down.
Never set her ass down.
Thank you so much. Let me stop this recording. Big thank you to Tamika Newhouse for being here this week. Make sure you check out Tamika's latest romance collection, Sugar Hill. And if you're not following Tamika, follow her on the socials at Tamika Newhouse on Instagram and Twitter. That's our show for the week. If you liked this episode and want more Black and Published, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on your podcast platform of choice. And while you're there, go ahead, leave us a rating, a review. Tell us good things, tell us bad things, tell us who you want to hear on the show. We'd love to hear your feedback. You can also follow Black and Published at Black and Published on Instagram and Twitter at BLK and Published. And to keep up with me, head to newrights.com, that's my website, or follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Nikisha_Elise. That's our show for the week. I'll catch y'all next week. Peace.